Hello and welcome to The Conduit's new podcast series, Service Please. This series will be focusing on ethical and sustainable hospitality, engaging with a diverse range of industry experts and a variety of individuals across different sectors, disciplines, roles, and levels. From supply chains to sourcing, waste management to well-being and welfare, what problems need tackling and what does the future of hospitality look like? I'm Rosie Fletcher, the editorial manager at The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. And today, I'm super excited to be joined by Ellie Besley-Gould. Ellie leads purpose at the Hawksmoor Restaurant Group, which includes the strategic planning and delivery of sustainability. In 2021, they became the world's first carbon-neutral steak restaurant group and have a commitment to ensuring sourcing the best produce they can get hold of. Hawksmoor has set the group an ambitious net zero target of 2030 and has already moved the whole UK company to green energy. Ellie is passionate about the impact businesses can have on achieving global sustainability goals and has been blown away by how much progress is already being seen in the hospitality sector. Prior to working at Hawksmoor, Ellie led climate change at various NGOs for over a decade. With her own company, The Greenish, Ellie also consults with a wide range of hospitality businesses, supporting them to become greener. Hi, Ellie. Welcome to our podcast. Thrilled to have you here. Congratulations on the B Corp.
Thank you. It's such fortuitous timing that I'm here a week later.
Let's begin with a beginning question. Tell me a bit about your journey in this space, coming to be head of purpose at Hawksmoor and all of the other aspects that come with that. How did you get here?
It's quite a long and convoluted journey.
I love a long and convoluted journey.
So I started at Hawksmoor as kind of employee number 3 or 4 back in 2006, and had always been in hospitality throughout my studies and things. But then after I graduated, I moved into NGOs. And focused mostly on climate change and environment in the NGOs. And then towards, I don't know, maybe around 2019, I think I left the sector to set up a sort of lifestyle platform that focused on sustainability for people without any of the judgy preachiness around it. So the idea was to find simple, kind of easy to reach ways for people to be a bit greener that were kind of realistic within their lifestyles, that they didn't have to be super green to be able to do them. And very, very quickly, started working with brands on the same thing. So something that would work for your brand and doesn't have to be perfection. It's sustainability in your way, which is enough, I think. And I think the more we can talk about moving the dial a little bit, the better. And then I got talking to some of the people I already knew at Hawksmoor, and they wanted to have someone come in and help with their B Corp application.
And this was when?
So that was early last year. So okay. About 18 months ago.
Okay.
So I came in just on that tip. And then very quickly, we picked up a lot of other work and started looking really strategically around purpose, I suppose, that whole for purpose journey that B Corp's all about.
And so your title is Head of Purpose. Mm-hmm. What does that actually mean? And what does it mean to you specifically?
It is a combination of things. So it's sort of looking after our 5 stakeholder groups when it comes to, our non-commercial stuff. So that means our teams, the environment, our customers, the communities we're in, and then our role within the sector. So not kind of anything to do with the day-to-day operations of the restaurants, but actually kind of looking at how we're performing on some of the things that we want to bake in, our value set, if you like. So we've developed a strategy that sets indicators around kind of how much mental health first aid training there is, or how women's safety is going in pulse surveys, or what our carbon footprint is, or how much volunteering we're doing, and what kind of sharing we're doing with the industry and mentoring and things like that. So it's a way of having a strategy and a monitoring system in place for the things that we want to make sure we continue to do as we grow.
I mean, it's quite unusual in the industry to have such a focus on all of those aspects in that way. Do you sense that as well?
I'm definitely seeing a bit more of this kind of role come in, and particularly around sustainability, for sure. People are recruiting in within hospitality, people looking after specifically just that. I think it's fairly unusual to have someone overseeing all of those indicators. And I should add that I'm not responsible for delivering on lots of that. I don't think anyone could do that. There's an amazing team of experts who do all the work on most of it.
That would be a lot of work.
I just have to call them once a quarter and ask about it. But one of the things that was really important for us when I started this piece of work was a way of capturing how we could continue to grow as a business and not lose that values-driven approach. And I think the bigger you get, the easier it is to think about commercial margins. And of course, those are really important. And that's how you remain a sustainable business in the like stricter sense of the term. But being able to make sure that we are responsible for delivering against things more than our finances is really critical to Hawksmoor as a company. So for me, it's the best role in the whole world because I get to be everyone's nice bit of the day, really, which is amazing, absolutely amazing.
And one of the amazing achievements of Hawksmoor thus far is reaching carbon neutral and switching to green energy. Mm-hmm. Has that been a real challenge? Have there been lots of obstacles to that?
It's again a bit of a mixed bag. So going to green energy was an accidentally great move in that I came in and just asked our energy brokers if they could give us green prices alongside brown energy every time that we renewed. I hadn't anticipated that it would be a 3-month away change. And what ended up happening, because it was the end of last year, so before prices started spiraling, was that we ended up saving 40% on green energy. And that was electricity specifically. Yeah. And we just hadn't looked at the numbers before. So I think in the past, you used to have to look. Now what's happening, of course, is that the market's gone up across the board. So you don't get that discount on green energy at the moment. But obviously, long term, it's the way to go, right? Mm. It takes away a lot of our kind of scope 2 emissions, if you like. And then, so that was relatively easy. But I don't want to say it's going to continue to be easy. I don't know what happens to prices next year, and I don't want to predict it, but the main thing for us around energy now is how do we cut our usage?
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that we can keep this going long term. Yeah. We've got to look at every single bit of the business and how we're going to do that. And we've got a big project going on at the moment, kind of inspired by the German government and the way that they're looking
across. Are you able
across.
To share anything about the
project? I mean, the way that we're doing, I've just spent the last few weeks developing baselines against 2019, because I don't know about all other restaurant groups in the sector, but lots of us opened in 2022 and didn't do day parts on every day or open some services or restricted cover numbers because of sickness. So 22 didn't feel like a very good baseline. Mm-hmm. And 21, I mean, the data's all over the place, same 20. So I'm using 2019 data and just looking at 22 as a comparison and seeing, this is really boring and complex, but looking at where where we're using energy. So doing half hourly data on every site through the year.
And where are you using the most energy?
So it's always things that are warming up or cooling down where you'll see the biggest impact. So that means we're working with chefs on reducing the hours that cooking stuff is on.
Yeah.
So whether you can turn your hot top off between services or put it on a bit later during prep. And there's, until we've had to think about energy, the efficient way for chefs to work is to walk in and switch on the whole cook line because it's done then. That's a job out the way.
Yeah.
And so now we're talking to them about how they think they can make these changes.
And are those easy conversations? Are your chefs on board with this? Do they understand that it's something that we all need to start doing more of?
They totally, totally understand if you start with the why and talk to them about, if you do the sort of macro into the micro and sort to talk about climate change, sustainability, what do you think we should do? How do you think you could do that in the kitchen? Absolutely brilliant conversation. And also having that conversation in the kitchen makes a huge difference instead of expecting them to come on a Zoom call or come into an office. They just don't feel so comfortable.
As well.
It's their space.
Yeah.
And they should feel powerful and they should be able to make decisions around how to solve things. Mm. I think the other thing is, I don't want to ever go into a kitchen and say, this is what you're doing now. Mm. It might not work for them. And every single chef works differently and every single kitchen has a different profile and different customer bases. So we've got to find solutions that are good across the board. But then there's also things we can set, like, I don't know, timers on extracts and lights and changing everything to LED. Or what else have we done really recently that was quite a good one? I tell you what, checking all the equipment more regularly for things like fridge seals being fixed and things. So it used to be a yearly thing, it's become a quarterly thing. And it's just about little bits
it's the
that
small
make
things.
A difference. Because so, it adds up over 10 sites, it really does.
And in your experience, if you are a new or existing hospitality business, restaurant, and you want to begin to embark on this kind of journey, is there sort of a set blueprint that you work from that other venues and businesses can use?
Yeah, so there's, I'd say it's, and to your earlier point, it's unusual to have someone like me who's able to focus specifically on this bit of work. And if you are a smaller restaurant group or the same size restaurant group or a bigger restaurant group, but with smaller margins or a smaller head office team or whatever, it's really hard to know where to start. And usually, except with the current energy crisis, you have great intentions, and people always have great intentions when I meet them. But then, you know, you've got a busy Friday shift, or someone's called in sick, or, you know, hospitality, real life gets in the way. So I think the way that I would say to start out is to get some baselines. So get your data together, because if you don't have your data, you won't know if anything's working. So things like how much energy you're using, how much water you use, how much waste you generate, as simple as that, just those baselines, run them for 6 months or something. Then think about what you want to achieve as a company. I think you cannot be all things for all people, and it's got to start somewhere. So if it's that you want to be zero waste, then focus on that. If it's that you want to cut out single-use plastic, do that. Or if it's that you want to lower carbon footprint, do that. But try not to do it all at once, and maybe look at it in a four-year plan instead of a one-year plan. I think the Sustainable Restaurant Association are an absolutely incredible resource. So you sign up as a member, you get audited. They either give you a star rating and a report on how you can improve, or you just have a report on how you could get to a star rating. So the Hawksmoor, we've been three-star rated for about 12 years, which is the most you can get, and that's fantastic. But it continues to be harder and harder to get there, you know.
So you continuously have to meet those
standards. Yeah, you have to. And they grow their remit as well every year. But on top of that, they also do kind of a quarterly deep dive meeting where there will be all sorts of businesses who are great at this in the sector getting together with experts, with the SRA, who are also experts, and just going into to like specific topics. So currently doing like supply chain or plastic free or gas or whatever. So they'll pick a topic and we'll go into that and just share knowledge, which is really, really good shortcutting, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's really useful advice, is to use an outsized resource to help you put those
practices
in place.
And I'd say the other thing that I've found, if you start talking about sustainability in any way publicly, you will get bombarded by suppliers of all sorts of things that say they cut energy use, or say they cut costs, or say they've improved sustainability. But there are so many, and unless you're an expert in that field, it's really hard to know which thing you need.
And so you use the Sustainable Restaurant Association to be able to sort of sift through to the ones
I mean, I feel like we're fairly simplistic in the way we do it. We know where we want to get to, so we kind of know which tools we reach out and get. But if you didn't, I think that's definitely a good place to go. You can also like ask other people on the forum or whatever about whether they've tried it, what they thought the results were. Hospitality is so great at talking to each other. So.
Yeah, it's a great community.
Right? Yeah, it's amazing. It's really great.
And Hawksmoor is quite unusual in the sense that you are a predominantly meat-serving restaurant. And we know that meat consumption is quite polarizing at the moment, especially when it comes to sustainability. How do you deal with that? And actually, what specific practices do you have to put into place in order to make sure you're meeting the standards that you should be?
Yeah, such a good question. I'm really glad to be asked it, because I think we talk about it a lot in the restaurant world, but maybe it's not such a mainstream topic. And I think it's really, really, really important that the meat conversation becomes more nuanced. I think the risk is that we say meat is bad, meat's not something you should have, then people kind of go, that's not a message for me. I'm going to continue to eat meat and not change my ways.
Yeah.
Whereas the reality is, if we all cut down on how much meat we ate and ate much, much better meat, that would be like a really great solution for the sector, for our food industry. It sort of works better if we do it more thoughtfully. I think for us as a restaurant group, the most important thing we can do is source the best beef that you can find and talk about it to people so that people know what the best looks like. And the other thing is, we're not encouraging people to come every day. Hawksmoor's a really special occasion restaurant. And I think for us, it's about making sure that the the beef that you eat at Hawksmoor has had a life that you could kind of sit down with your kids, take them to a farm and show them the cow and know that that was a truly happy story that didn't feel like something you were ashamed of or you didn't think you should do.
It's so interesting. And as you now have 10 sites, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you use the same supplier across all of them?
It's a lot of different farms. So we've probably got, depending on the year, depending on kind of what's happening with herds, we've probably got about 600 different farmers.
Wow.
That work with Hawksmoor. Every single one of them is being carbon footprinted over the next 2 years, which is quite exciting.
And that's extraordinary.
It's amazing, isn't it? I'm not sure what next, but it's just really going to be fascinating to get that data. And increasingly, I mean, we held supply chain meetings quite recently to ask people what their own net zero goals are, what their journey is, what their footprint and everything. And they are starting to have the conversations almost everywhere. And it's not developed, but it's exciting that, you know, within 5 to 10 years, we'll see a completely different landscape. But the farmers are, so they're, we work with farmers who have herd sizes of very different kind of varieties and all over the country. And we just go and visit them quite a lot. So our co-founder, Hugh Gott, goes to farms quite often and he always takes a shovel and digs into the soil and has a look in there.
That's amazing.
Well, he's like, he was told, I can't remember who by, that, you know, if you want to know how, what the farm's like, see what the birds and bugs and bees and everything are like.
Dig into the soil,
have a look. Yeah. And he always does that now, and it's become his thing, and it's part of the conversation about biodiversity.
Yeah.
It's part of the conversation about kind of what they feel about sustainability. And the farmers are, they're way ahead of most people we work with. They really get it because they live in
the
land.
They live and breathe it.
They care so much about nature, and they do loads of biodiversity projects that they're not told to do, they're not funded to do, they just do it for their area, you know.
It's great. Is it quite hard work, though, to develop those direct relationships? And presumably having those relationships and being able to go and visit the farm is crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've got a procurement system that's got about 30-page spec on what the quality of beef needs to be, and that's got everything from sireage to genetics to feed, obviously no hormones and things like that, and no antibiotics, because, you know, in Britain we've got slightly higher standards. But in the US, we've got a restaurant in New York, and those sorts of things have to be really spelled out there. So we've got a really, really stringent beef standards document that everybody has to agree to in order to be part of that supply chain.
And that is a great lead on to my next question on what are the differences between the US and the UK, or the US and the rest of the world, in terms of their sustainability standards. Now that you've moved across to New York, how are you having to deal with things in a different way?
I feel like in the UK, apart from imported meat, our domestic meat, so the things that live here, have generally got a better life and standards than we see as standard in the US. So in the US, our point of difference is quite significant. I think it's really important here in the UK that we stand by our beef and we feel really proud of it. And we continue to do that. But in the US, I think the journey's been much more complicated. The director team went out years ago and traveled the whole of the states tasting everything. And they didn't just want to see the good stuff. They went to see what the industrialized farming looked like, what intensive rearing looked like, and just they're really, really face to face with what the reality is over there. And I think there are some people doing amazing things, and we've got a beautiful supply chain that's all from the Northeast Seaboard, and it's grass fed, and it's an absolute delight. But it is unusual, and actually the taste profile of that meat is very different to what American consumers on the whole are used
to.
So it's
that's so interesting. Taste is so different.
To them it tastes much gamier because they're used to a corn-fed diet.
Does that put diners off?
Not yet. It's been a really, really big success, in the sense that people, I mean, it was quite ballsy to open a steakhouse in New York anyway. But to then challenge the norm of what steak looks like, it's been an absolute success, and it's unbelievable and a testament to the team there. They've done such a good job.
And I mean, I guess that's part of engaging a wider audience as well and bringing sort of slightly different concepts to the US. And I'm also convinced that we need to engage the mainstream in these topics. How important do you think the role of hospitality is in behavioral change, in creating more understanding? And what do you think the focus points need to be?
I love that. I think that as businesses of a certain size, we have a responsibility to do things right. What we then should not do is ram it down people's throats. So in a sense, people, for example, at Hawksmoor, it feels like we should continue to see customers coming in and having the same special experience and meal with their friends and family. And as we develop and grow our sustainability threads, they just hear a bit more about it in a really nice way that flows as part of the meal. So I think we have an opportunity to talk to people about ethical sourcing and supply chain. And we do so much training on beef and cattle and farms, and we take all our teams to farm visits and, you know, down to Brixham to see the fish, and we make sure that it feels like part of what they can talk about. Yeah. And they've got that repertoire, so it becomes an exciting talking point and point of service, in the same way that you'd say, oh, this strawberry came from the farm down the road. It's just kind of making sure that people feel really confident in that way, so that it's a celebration and normalization of the way we want to see beef happen, and that feels really good. I think maybe for the sector in general, it's kind of about that, right? It's about making sure that what we're able to put out there is something we can be proud of, focusing on seasonality, focusing on produce that feels really good in a way that your customers want to see it. So not just kind of suddenly shifting. And one of the things we often get asked is whether we would do a veggie burger, for example.
Yeah.
And every year we talk about it, and we're yet to see a protein alternative that has the same ethical welfare sourcing standards that we would expect from anything else that came into the restaurant. So it's something that is an ongoing project, and I really want to make it work, but it's not there yet. The product isn't there yet. So,
and is there demand at a Hawksmoor restaurant for a veggie burger?
I don't know about latent demand, but one of the things that we've done this year for the first time is a vegan dish. So we've always got, I think we've always, since the last 6 months anyway, had a vegan dish on the menu, and that's partly recognition of wanting to introduce more vegetable options for people. I mean, you don't want to come to Hawksmoor every day for lunch and eat steak, but if you popped in for lunch and dinner, you'd maybe have the vegetarian for one or the other. But it also means that you can come with your whole family, because I think increasingly we're seeing vegetarianism is coming up, and that's great. But we want to make sure that if you come in... Yeah, it's inclusive. And if you come in as a vegetarian or as a vegan, you can still have the best meal you've ever had and not feel like it's not a place for you.
I love that. And I love the involvement of the staff in the entire journey. And I think that that's so important, of empowering the workforce and looking after their well-being as well, which I know is super important to you. Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that all of your staff are cared for? Because I know that the hospitality industry doesn't necessarily have the best reputation for always being a workplace that treats their staff well. Yeah. What do you do at Hawksmoor to ensure that?
I think the sector's really seen a change over the last 10 years, and we're seeing people take careers in hospitality in a way that I feel like we used to see in Europe and not here.
Yeah.
Maybe I've got that wrong, but the people goals at Hawksmoor are so big, and we've got an amazing people team. And I think they care deeply about the genuine outcomes and development for our teams. And we talk to our teams so much about what they want, what they need, what they think we could do better on, what they've enjoyed over the last few years. And everyone is listened to. So then we can start creating programs around them. And that means things like asking what benefits they actually want, instead of just putting piles and piles of benefits in their way. Or doing surveys to ask how you feel, and then asking, you know, what your background is and whether people have a different feeling about inclusivity depending on their background, and then looking at digging down into that data a bit more. I think it's all about having it as a primary function and valuing people. We did some filming this morning over at Spitalfields restaurant, and everyone we brought in, they've been with the company for 6 years or more, and it was just a really nice reminder that it's working, you know, because we've had so many years of COVID and now upheaval. We're in the recruitment craziness. Challenges and looking at energy challenges down the line. I think being able to see that people have been looked after and they feel like they're part of something is really critical.
And that staff retention is super important, and it's quite unusual.
It's very hard to do, and I think the last few years have been really hard, and the whole sector has seen an exodus of people. But being able to start those again.
Why do you think that is?
The exodus from the sector. Yeah. It's kind of, all I know is the data from people I work with in kind of other hospitality businesses or at Hawksmoor, and it seems to be a combination of retraining, people going back to Europe, and kind of COVID just made people kind of rethink what they were doing. But funnily enough, everyone I talk to in other sectors also seems to have recruitment problems. So yeah. I don't know where all the people have ended up because they're not anywhere.
But I do think that it did give individuals a chance to, like you say, recalibrate the way that they wanted to work. But that sort of then makes you think that the reason they don't want to work in the hospitality industry is because it's not particularly easy industry to work in. And it's actually given the industry as a whole a chance to focus on actually what needs to be done to improve
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, and it ranges so much from person to person, but looking at what people want has been a real game changer, I think. And sort of listening to people talking about flexibility on hours and hearing about the kind of training they want. And the other thing that we put in is as soon as you hit a certain level, you get into the management training program, which can last through your whole career, basically, at Hawksmoor. So you qualify to be a manager and then you go into senior management training. And it's that personal growth and feeling like you can develop with a company that I think is really critical to making people feel like they want to be in a place and there's more to come.
And are there other examples of hospitality businesses like Hawksmoor that we should be looking to as role models in this area and sustainability and staff welfare? Who are the leading lights?
Oh yeah, there's so many great businesses, and I won't name them all because I couldn't possibly come up with them all, but I work with some amazing people. So I love what Nando's do on sustainability. I absolutely love it because they're completely mainstreaming what used to be a niche thing. And I love that they're doing it in the casual dining sector because I think that's probably the last place you'd expect to see it. Wahaka are incredible on sustainability and really like pioneered it. She's amazing. She's absolutely incredible. And she's so nuanced and she's so balanced in the way she talks about it. She's not preachy at all.
Well, I think to go back to what we were saying earlier, that making it not such a huge thing for people, like you don't have to ram it down their throats.
Yeah.
But you're including everyone in the conversation just by the small things that you're doing.
Absolutely. And then there's, I work with The Pig quite a lot, and they've got really great kind of garden to table, zero-mile menus. They look after their teams really well. They're a really good example. I know Dishoom look after their teams really well, but obviously I don't know the whole sector, and I'm sure there are so many examples of people doing a great job.
Well, I hope so. I think there are beginning to be more.
Yeah, definitely. And I really, truly feel like, I work with loads of businesses and all of them, hand on heart, genuinely feel like they want to do the best things. They want to be the best they can be, not just for profit, but for people and for planet as well, which sounds really cheesy, but they're so well-intentioned.
Yeah.
It's blown my mind. And I feel like I spent so many years working in NGOs trying to get people to get excited about climate change. And here we are with businesses leading the way, which is... Yeah. Absolutely incredible.
And the hospitality sector leading the way as
well.
Yeah,
totally.
Is awesome. And what can we do as individuals, as diners, as customers to help?
That's a really good question, because the more time I spend on this, the more I feel like it should be very easy for customers. It shouldn't be hard work. There shouldn't be a barrier in the way. So I think it's about If there was something customers could do, it's about asking questions, which is what I always used to talk about when I was doing the lifestyle work. It would be kind of if you're in a shop buying a dress and it doesn't say anything about the provenance or it doesn't say anything about the supply chain.
Yeah, ask the question.
If there isn't an answer, it's probably the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And I think the same is probably true of hospitality.
Yeah.
If you're interested in this stuff, then definitely ask the questions. Don't be afraid to ask. And 9 times out of 10, the business has probably got a great story and loads that they want to say about it. And they just don't want to ram it down your throats.
Yeah.
And they'll be really pleased to be asked.
Yeah.
And if they're not asked, it might just start the process of having them think about what they could be doing better.
Definitely. So what's next for you and for Hawksmoor? Where do you see this going now? You've done so much work on it already. What are the next things?
It's been a busy couple of years. I think for us, we've just been certified as a B Corp, which means we've kind of got this third party accreditation, which says we're very kind of stringently assessed on all these areas of our for purpose side of our business. And the kind of thing with B Corp is about continuous improvement. So for me, the next 6 months, next 12 months is about looking at how you can move from good to great on those things and really drilling down deeply into what we could do better at, how we could do it better, and how we can share it a bit more with the sector, like what our role is here as we continue to grow. Because as a business, we're planning to grow. So it's got to be growing in a way that we can feel really proud of, values first, and continue to be that kind of company. So it's going to be a really exciting few years, I think.
It sounds super exciting. Do you think that expansion will challenge you in keeping to those standards?
Definitely. I mean, in lots of ways, it challenges. It's hard when you've got someone... So we're opening in Liverpool in November, and it's hard when you've got someone who's trying to build a restaurant and you call up and say, can it be all electric? and people do, and it's wonderful and the reception's amazing. But as you grow, you have more people and there's more sites to think about. And so it is harder, and it's got to be about continuing to be permanently on it. But I think with growth also comes some efficiency. So we've got better systems in place. We're learning how to manage things like energy and waste in a really systematic way. And it allows us to take some shortcuts and sort of do things in one site, pilot it, and then roll it out. So we've got some opportunities with growth as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also an amazing opportunity to show everyone else what's possible.
Yeah, I mean, we learn a lot from each other. I was also going to mention Silo, which is obviously incredible. But what I'm hoping we can do is allow other people in our sector to see what we've done and just do the same without having to spend loads of time and resource on it.
And will you, I mean, is that information accessible for other people to see what you've done and how you've done it and then sort of do it themselves?
I'm trying to work out, I'm talking to our marketing director actually about what information is interesting to people. Because lots of people visit kind of things like our website. We have customers, we'll have our team on there sometimes, and we'll also have people in our sector. And I think at the moment, it's a question of, you know, we're relatively small as a group of people. Most of us have a connection to other people in hospitality. So I'm just sharing documents and theories and having lots of calls and coffees. And our directors often go and do mentoring with smaller businesses and try things out like that. But I think it's an interesting idea to kind of blueprint a policy or think about having it very publicly available so that someone could just take it and walk with it and see what works for them. And it's certainly something that's very achievable. So it's just whether that is useful.
I think it most definitely is useful. I mean, yeah, what an amazing thing that would be just to give that information and people can just run with it.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, make it as easy as possible because we're all trying to raise the bar for hospitality,
and
aren't
we? That's how more people are going to be involved, right? Because
totally,
it needs to be easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when we started this work, talking to suppliers about their carbon footprint or talking to them about which farm what came from used to be a difficult question, or talking to your energy broker and saying, why is that data showing us this number at this time of day? They used to go, oh God, I've been paid to do not this for a while, and now you're poking around. But more and more and more other hospitality businesses are asking those questions. So the suppliers and the brokers and everyone are getting used to it. So it's less of a barrier to getting stuff done. You don't have to be a real outlier anymore.
Awesome. On that note, I'm going to turn to my quick fire round questions.
Amazing.
Are you ready? Are you poised? Okay. What does hospitality mean to you?
So I think hospitality has to be about, again, it sounds really cheesy, but it's got to be about everyone being welcome in a place. Hospitality for me is about walking into a room and feeling like I'm supposed to be there.
Love it. What is your desert island dish?
Is this cooking or being fed?
Being fed.
Okay. Really amazing chicken, like beautiful organic chicken salad.
Chicken salad. Yeah. Okay.
It's so basic, isn't it?
Any specific chicken salad that you
had? Any chicken? Just salad? Like really good roast chicken with a green salad is, I'd eat that any day of the week, and I would love to have that on a desert island.
There's a restaurant in San Francisco called Zuni.
Right.
Which apparently has the best chicken salad in the world.
So I'm absolutely going to have to go there. Your fly.
What's your season of choice?
Summer.
Why?
Oh, I just love, I love being outdoors in the sun. I live in Chicago and it's still 30 degrees over there, and over here it's gone down to kind of, yeah, it kind of feels a bit autumny.
Definitely feels a bit autumny.
And it's amazing how I'm like, oh, that's really sad. I just love just running out the door without thinking about accessories and winter stuff and just getting stuck into like jumping into the lake.
Yeah, definitely. What is your newsagent confectionery of choice?
Ooh. Am I allowed to say Tony's? It's in some newsagents. As in Tony's Chocolonely.
Tony's Chocolonely.
It's the most expensive.
I was going to say.
But it's so
You're
good.
Allowed it. I'll allow
am
it.
Am I? Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
I mean, is there a particular variety? Because it has lots of flavours.
It's got sea salt in it. I don't know which. It's orange. It's orange. The orange one.
The orange Tony's Chocolonely. Got it. I know you're a bit nervous about this question, but what is your favourite restaurant?
I'm really nervous about this. Partly because I don't want to offend anyone, but mostly because I feel like it's being similar to being asked your favourite piece of music.
It's a tricky one.
But I think I can narrow it down to like some of the best that I've had.
Go for it.
So I went to Rita's recently, which was absolutely incredible.
In Soho?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Missy and Gabriel have done an amazing job there. It's Mexican. It's incredible. Palomar is probably the place where I've had the best meal of my life.
Interesting.
Kiln, I absolutely love, especially in winter. For some reason, I really like going there in winter. And I went to Trishna the other day and it was really fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and obviously Hawksmoor. And then,
okay.
I used to live in France and my dad would come and visit, but we'd meet in Paris. And he, every single time he came, there's this like brasserie opposite the Gare du Nord. And we would get champagne and seafood platter every time he came.
That's such a lovely
And I feel
tradition.
Like I can't have it not in the list. So I've got six there. I'm sorry.
No, you're allowed all of those six. They're all excellent choices. What three words would you use to describe the future of hospitality?
Future of hospitality. So I think efficient, inclusive, and development, I think we're really moving in a way that people can feel part of the sector for a really long time. And I think that's really special.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ellie.
Thank you, Rosie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Please, the ethical hospitality podcast from The Conduit. Please do subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. And for more information about The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com.